18:30 UTC.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Monday changes would be announced imminently in the government, the regions, and in security forces following allegations of corruption nearly a year into Russia's invasion. Zelensky said, quote, there are already personnel decisions, some today, some tomorrow, regarding officials of various levels in ministries and other central government structures, as well as in the regions and law enforcement system. Ukrainian media outlets have reported several cabinet ministers and senior officials could be sacked as Zelensky tries to streamline the government. With both sides' battlefield positions mostly deadlocked during winter, the Kremlin's forces have kept up their bombardments of Ukrainian areas, AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The Kharkiv region's governor says Russian forces have shelled several towns and villages in northeastern Ukraine in the previous 24-hour period, killing a 67-year-old woman and leaving another resident wounded. Neither side, however, shows signs of backing down as the war heads for a second year. The Kremlin appears to be keeping its options open on mobilizing more soldiers. Russian authorities have declared the call-up of 300,000 reservists in late October is complete, but Vladimir Putin's decree remains in effect until another ruling is issued to formally end the action. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A former top FBI official was arrested over the weekend on accusations he worked for sanctioned Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, prosecutors said on Monday. Charles McGonigal, who led the U.S. agency's counterintelligence division in New York before retiring in 2018, faces four counts, including sanctions violations and money laundering. This is VOA News. There's been another conviction from the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol attack. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
Most people have seen the picture of the man who propped his feet up on a desk in then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office during the Capitol riot. Richard Big O Barnett has been convicted of joining the mob's attack on the building 2 years ago. A jury found the 62-year-old from Arkansas guilty on all eight counts, including felony charges of civil disorder and obstruction of an official proceeding. He's scheduled to be sentenced in May. More than 940 people have been charged with federal crimes related to the January 6th attack. Nearly 500 of them have pleaded guilty. I'm Shelley Adler.
Four members of the Oath Keepers have been convicted of seditious conspiracy in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
This verdict is against Joseph Hackett, Roberto Menuda, David Morchel, and Edward Vallejo. It comes just weeks after a different jury convicted the group's leader, Stuart Rhodes, in the attack that halted certification of President Biden's electoral victory. It's another major victory for the Justice Department, which also is trying to secure sedition convictions against a former leader of the Proud Boys and four associates. The Justice Department so far has brought nearly 1,000 cases, and the number increases by the week. Mike Hempen, Washington.
Police near Los Angeles confirmed on Monday 11 people have now died following the mass shooting during a Lunar New Year celebration. Monterey Park Police Chief Scott Weiss said authorities are still searching for a motive as they investigate.
The why is a big part of this. The problem is we may never know the why, and we have to work past that.
He also detailed how he was helping the police officers who witnessed the aftermath of the massacre at the ballroom in Monterey Park. Seven people were killed and one critically injured Monday in two shootings in Half Moon Bay in Northern California, U.S. media reported. There was no immediate official confirmation of the toll from authorities, but San Mateo County Sheriff said on Twitter it was dealing with an incident. The two incidents reported by U.S. media happened at farms close to each other in an area south of San Francisco. In the Midwestern U.S. state of Iowa, two teenage students were killed and a man was seriously injured in what police call the targeted shooting at an alternative educational program for at-risk youth in Des Moines. Police arrested three people shortly after Monday's shooting. A police spokesman said the shooting was definitely targeted. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, January 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the European Union approves more military aid to Ukraine as Russia warns of more attacks on Kyiv.
Today we reached a political agreement for the seventh tranche of military support with an additional 500 million and an additional assistance measure worth 45 million.
Japan beefs up its military readiness under a newly adopted security strategy.
In a policy speech opening this year's parliamentary session, Kishida said active diplomacy should be prioritized, but it requires defense power to back it up.
And journalists in Cameroon call for investigation into the killing of a prominent reporter. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Seven people were killed in two related shootings Monday at a mushroom farm and a trucking firm in a coastal community south of San Francisco, and a suspect was in custody, officials said. San Mateo County Board of Supervisors President Dave Pine says four people were killed at the farm and three at the trucking business on the outskirts of Half Moon Bay, a city of about 30 miles south of San Francisco. The police have arrested 67-year-old Xiao Chun-Li in connection with the shooting, Pine said. The European Union's foreign policy chief Josep Borrell says the EU foreign ministers agreed on Monday to allocate another 500 million euros for military aid for Ukraine. Agreement on the seventh tranche of aid to Ukraine came as the group's 27 foreign ministers met in Brussels after Western countries failed last week to agree on sending Kyiv battle tanks but pledged billions worth of support.
We will continue our support to Ukraine. Ukraine has to win this war, and we will support on the best possible way. Today we reached a political agreement for the seventh tranche of military support with an additional 500 million and an additional assistance measure worth 45 million for the Ukrainian force being trained by our military training mission.
That's EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell. Dozens of people gathered outside the European Union Council on Monday to call on EU foreign ministers to deliver German mid-Leopard tanks to Ukraine. The Kremlin warned that Ukrainian people would suffer if the West sent tanks to support Kyiv. This as Germany started to deploy Patriot air defense missiles to Poland in order to help secure its NATO allies' airspace. Russia's foreign minister cast the conflict between Moscow and the West as, quote, not hybrid, unquote, and, quote, almost a real war, unquote. Sergei Lavrov, speaking during a trip to South Africa, also criticized the West for sending billions of dollars of arms to Kyiv. For more, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden on Ukraine's choice of the Leopard tanks.
There are some reasons the Leopard 2 tank, German-made tank, is an attractive option. First of all, military experts say when you're comparing tanks being made by Western countries, the Leopard 2 is one of the best out there right now. It's maneuverable. It can hit targets up to 5 kilometers away. Also, it's worth noting, this is a tank that is being used by about 20 countries, including key Western allies, Canada, Denmark, Finland, Sweden, the Netherlands, Norway, Austria, Poland. So that means there are a lot of countries that if they just give a few tanks, Ukraine could end up with a good number of these tanks to put into battle and use against the Russians. Also, because so many countries use the Leopard 2, that means there are supply chains there that make it easier for Ukraine to get help with maintenance and supplies. And we're hearing now that Poland is saying it will give some of its Leopard tanks to Kyiv. And what German officials are saying is that they're not going to stand in the way of this.
The defense secretary, or DefSec, of the United States was in Germany where there was this discussion about tanks. Looks like the pressure for Germany to supply these tanks did not work. Is the Pentagon playing any role now to make sure Ukraine gets these Leopard tanks, at least to persuade Germany to approve some of these tanks or to sell some of these tanks to Ukraine?
Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin have been playing a leading role in going out and working with other allies to try to get Ukraine the military systems, the equipment, the weaponry that it needs to push back Russia as Russia continues its invasion into Ukraine and continues to try to hold on to territory it took after it went in last February. Now, the U.S. has drawn some lines about what they're willing to do, and there seems to be an understanding that other countries also have their own lines. And with Germany politically seems very hesitant, for multiple reasons, to give Leopard tanks directly to Ukraine. However, there seems to be some thought where German officials are now coming out and saying that, well, Germany won't give Ukraine Leopard tanks. It's not going to stop other countries, and Poland being first and foremost among them. But, you know, there are about 20 countries that have these tanks. It's not going to stop any of those countries from deciding to give their German-made tanks to Ukraine. So that can be a sign of progress. Now, it also gets a little complicated because there's been some suggestions, some reporting, some clamor that the U.S. should send some of its tanks to Ukraine, namely the M1 Abrams tank. U.S. officials consistently, though, have pushed back against that because while they say the Abrams is a very effective, very capable tank, it's also complex. Training is going to take longer than for many of the other tanks. Maintenance is more involved, more difficult. And also, they say it's a fuel hog. This is a tank that, while it's really capable, it uses a lot of fuel. And that is something that would strain Ukraine's military's ability to keep these tanks moving in any sort of offensive.
That's VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida says Japan faces the severest security environment in the region since the end of World War II and is pledging to push a military buildup under a newly adopted security strategy. Associated Press correspondent Charles Dedaledesma reports.
In a policy speech opening this year's parliamentary session, Kishida said active diplomacy should be prioritized, but it requires defense power to back it up. He said Japan's new security strategy is based on a realistic simulation as we face, he says, more regional tensions since the end of World War II. This month, the Japan leader took a five-nation tour, including to Washington, to explain Japan's new defense plan and further develop defense ties with the U.S. I'm Charles Dulles.
Burkina Faso says it aims to defend itself after the government announced it had decided to end a military accord that allowed French troops to fight insurgents on its territory. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
Burkina Faso has decided to end a military accord that allowed French troops to fight militants on its territory, the government said on Monday. The West African country is facing an insurgency by groups linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Large swathes of land have been taken over and millions displaced in the wider Sahel region. On Saturday, Burkinabe National Television reported that the government had suspended a 2018 military accord with Paris on January 18th, giving France 1 month to withdraw its troops. The next day, French President Emmanuel Macron said he was awaiting clarifications from transitional President Ibrahim Traoré. But on Monday, government spokesman Rimtalba Jean-Emmanuel Ouadriogo said, "We don't see how to be more clear than this." The vision of the Burkinabe transitional government, according to Ouadriogo, is for the country to defend itself. He added that it was not the end of diplomatic relations with France and that Burkina Faso still wanted support in the form of military equipment. French authorities did not immediately respond to requests for comment. But French influence in its former colonies has been declining. That could be seen in Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, on Friday. Hundreds gathered calling on the French army to get out and burning French flags. Both Burkina Faso and neighboring Mali are ruled by military juntas that seized power in the past 2 years and have burned bridges with traditional allies. Last year, French troops pulled out of Mali after a deterioration in relations. That departure coincided with the Malian junta's decision to hire Russian mercenaries to help it fight insurgents. Macron has accused Russia of predatory influence in troubled African countries.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is in Zambia to highlight joint efforts to improve global health and met with President Hakainde Hichilema. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
A day after her arrival in Zambia, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen inaugurated the newly built U.S.-funded Zambia National Public Health Institute. The institute was established to help Zambia prevent transmission of deadly diseases like COVID-19, monitor threats to public health, and effectively respond to any outbreaks. Yellen said health security has been a key pillar of the partnership between Zambia and the United States over the past two decades. It's important to sustainably finance public health institutions, she said, as the cost of preparedness is lower than the cost of responding to an outbreak once it starts. Yellen said the United States remains committed to improving regional and global health security through its $450 million U.S. dollar contribution to the newly launched pandemic fund.
Let me say how much we value our partnership, how important it is for the health of individual African countries, Africa as a whole, and beyond that, the global health situation. We've had a long partnership, and I think it's been a productive one. It's important for it to continue.
Earlier on Monday, Yellen visited Mylan Laboratories Distribution Center in Lusaka. Mylan Laboratory is a U.S. firm that employs 75 workers in Zambia, helping to distribute anti-malarial and antiretroviral treatments. While Yellen visited the facilities Monday, Africa Centers for Disease Control Director Ahmed Ogwell Omar put out a live virtual message to the visiting secretary commending the U.S. government for its massive investment in global health. Omar emphasized the need for the local manufacturing of drugs to deal with health challenges in Africa.
Local production is very key to the health security of the continent and by extension for the whole globe. And investing in well-selected manufacturing facilities for different health products, from diagnostics, therapeutics to vaccines, is really, really important for the way in which we are going to be handling the next round of outbreaks and, God forbid, another pandemic.
Yellen also expressed confidence that Zambia's debt restructuring process will be concluded soon, adding that this is in the interest of creditors as well, as Zambia faces a delay in the process. This follows the International Monetary Fund's approval of a $1.3 billion US dollar bailout last August aimed at kickstarting the country's ailing economy and restructuring its debt. Zambia's total public debt to foreign and local lenders was just shy of $27 billion US dollars at the end of June 2022, according to the Ministry of Finance. Zambia's foreign debt is spread across diverse regions, with $6 billion US dollars owed to China and the rest owed to various banks, nations, and multilateral institutions. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Thank you, Kathy. And the World Health Organization is calling for the total elimination of trans fat, which is responsible for 500,000 premature deaths each year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Trans fat is an artificial toxic chemical commonly found in packaged foods, baked goods, cooking oils, and spreads. The World Health Organization reports 5 billion people are exposed to this toxic product, increasing the risk of heart disease and death. Tom Frieden is president and chief executive officer of the public health initiative Resolve to Save Lives. He says the global elimination of trans fat from food could prevent up to 17 million deaths from cardiovascular diseases by 2040.
Very important to distinguish artificial trans fat, which is a toxic chemical which has no valid use in the food supply and should be eliminated, from saturated fat, which is an inherent part of many food groups and which nobody is proposing to ban. Think of artificial trans fat as the tobacco of nutrition. It has no valid use.
Progress has been made since 2018, when the WHO set a goal for the global elimination of trans fat in 2023. It says 43 countries now have implemented best practice policies for tackling trans fat in food, thus protecting 2.8 billion people from heart disease and death. Frieden, however, says that still leaves 5 billion people at risk from the devastating health impacts of trans fat. He says governments can stop these preventable deaths by enacting WHO's best practice policies. He notes several countries, especially Mexico, Nigeria, and Sri Lanka, are very close to passing these life-saving policies. All they need, he says, is a simple push to get them over the finish line.
Policy wins in one country can help encourage other countries to take action. We hope that leaders such as India, Bangladesh, and the Philippines will be examples for all of the South and Southeast Asia region. And we hope that Nigeria, along with South Africa, which has already banned trans fat, will be a leader for Africa.
Frieden says experience shows the industry can adapt, innovate, and replace trans fat with healthy alternatives. He notes this has been done in 43 countries. He says just a few large companies continue to manufacture this toxic product. He adds these companies will come into line when they see the days of trans fat are numbered. WHO reports most trans fat elimination policies have been implemented in high-income countries, mainly in the Americas and Europe. It says an increasing number of middle-income countries are following suit. As of now, no low-income countries have done so. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, journalists in Cameroon on Monday called for a, quote, urgent and rigorous, unquote, investigations into the death of a prominent reporter. The Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists said the mutilated body of Solomon Mbani Zongo, more popularly known as Martinez Zongo, was found Sunday near Saoa, a suburb of the capital. Zongo, a journalist and managing director of a private radio station, Aptitude FM, was abducted near his home on January 17th by unidentified men in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé. According to Rights Group, Zongo was the host of a popular daily show and regularly denounced alleged embezzlement by well-known people, particularly from the business world. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. After assuming power in August 2021, the Taliban government issues various decrees regarding Afghan women. This included bans on their employment and education and traveling more than 70 kilometers without a male relative. VOA's Nazar al-Islam has more from Kabul, Afghanistan, in this report narrated by Aisha Khali.
1 year ago, 19-year-old Sheba Faisal had no idea that she would be forced to stay at home and no longer attend school. The Taliban, which rose to power in August of 2021, placed a ban on girls' education. Faisal was in the 12th grade.
I wanted to become a doctor so that people of my country wouldn't be forced to go abroad for treatment. But unfortunately, that dream, for now, remains just a dream that is headed for destruction because now we can't go to school.
Her older sister, Niloufar Faisal, worked in the management sector for a private company. Now she is also being forced to stay at home.
Life without a job is very painful, especially when you are supporting yourself as a student and your family. I'm in very bad condition, like a walking dead person.
The Taliban has ordered women, like the Faisal sisters, working in many institutions to stay at home. The Taliban say they support girls' education and that they will soon clarify their position on the matter and reopen the girls' schools. However, Sheba Faisal is not ready to believe the Taliban's claims.
I think these people will always make some excuse and deceive us. I don't think our schools will open.
Despite not attending school, Sheba Faisal keeps herself busy. She has turned to poetry and says many of her friends have started to stay active by doing things like carpet weaving, sewing, embroidery, and handicrafts, biding time and hoping one day they will be able to resume their studies and pursue their dreams. For Nazrul Islam in Kabul, Afghanistan, Behjan Hamdard, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers say it's more difficult to fully observe the cosmos at night due to an increasing problem called light pollution. Light pollution is caused by artificial lighting like streetlights and other man-made sources. Artificial lighting, especially in heavier populated areas, produces something called sky glow, which is the gleaming luminance of the sky after sunset. A new study from a team of scientists led by the GFZ German Research Center for Geosciences suggests sky glow is increasing by 7 to 10% each year. According to their press release, study authors reached their findings after analyzing more than 50,000 naked eye observations made by a global community of citizen scientists between 2011 and 2022 who participated in the Globe at Night Citizen Science Project. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Stay tuned every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week, get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Rain on me. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The foreign and defense ministers of the United States and Japan met recently in Washington, D.C. for discussions aimed at strengthening the U.S.-Japan alliance in the face of increasing security challenges from the People's Republic of China, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and Russia. At a joint press briefing after the talks, Secretary of State Antony Blinken called the U.S.-Japan alliance the cornerstone of peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific. He praised Japan's new national security and defense strategies, which include a significant increase in security spending and investment in defense institutions and infrastructure. Secretary Blinken added, "These new strategies make clear Japan's commitment to take on new roles and foster even closer defense cooperation with the United States and our mutual partners."
We're committed to upholding shared values of democracy and human rights, defending the international rule of law, continuing to lead the world in tackling global challenges that no one country can solve alone.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin also underscored the clear strategic alignment between the United States and Japan and praised Japan's decision to strengthen its own defense as a key contribution to the maintenance of regional peace and stability. He welcomed what he called an historic alliance decision to optimize U.S. force posture in Japan by forward stationing more versatile, mobile, and resilient capabilities.
"These actions will bolster deterrence in the region and allow us to defend Japan and its people more effectively."
In particular, Secretary Austin pointed to the reorganization of a U.S. Marine Artillery Regiment on Okinawa into the 12th Marine Littoral Regiment. We will equip this new formation with advanced intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, as well as anti-ship and transportation capabilities that are relevant to the current and future threat environments, he explained. Our alliance is stronger than ever, building on a foundation of teamwork, trust, and shared values that has underpinned our relationship for decades, declared Secretary Austin. And so there is no challenge that we cannot overcome if we continue to work shoulder to shoulder.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.